Welcome to the Small Business Big Heart Podcast. I'm your host, Amber Zarikor. This podcast is loaded with raw stories from real people running successful businesses with heart to encourage and inspire you along your journey. We will focus on the heart behind the business, aka you, the business owner, by sharing their heart, their story, and the passion behind why they started in the first place. As a business owner myself, I'm here to remind you that in the midst of the organized chaos that comes with running a business, good things do indeed happen to good people. My goal and heart for this podcast is that you will walk away with lessons learned from people who have walked a similar journey for the inspiration to keep going. Chase that big, scary dream. Are you ready? Let's do this. Friends, and welcome to another episode of the Small Business Big Heart Podcast. Y'all, I was so inspired by today's guest and all of the nuggets of business wisdom that he loaded into this interview. As a business owner myself, and maybe for some of you listening, it is so easy for us to get caught up in that next great idea. Sometimes we can make business decisions based out of what is fresh and new. And it can feel so right at the time, but when we're not building from the heart, we heighten the chances of burnout from a lack of passion or boundaries, or become content in new trends that don't truly represent what we're passionate about. Today's guest has mastered the balance of pursuing great ideas all while prioritizing his why. Meet serial entrepreneur Ben Sweat. Ben is the owner of multiple online e-commerce businesses based out of Austin, Texas. Brands including Savvy Outdoors, Evely, Mo Sweat, and even more in the works. We have had the opportunity at Copperheart to brand some of these businesses, and the way that Ben runs his operations is out of this world. As a business owner, full-time employee, husband, and father of five, Ben has found a way to stay balanced in his many ventures by defining success as a family first and a business second. Interestingly enough, Ben's latest product developments have been exclusively for women. And with a wife and four daughters at home, it's so clear where he gets all of his brilliant ideas. On today's episode, Ben shares his story of entrepreneurship and how he's learned to hold each business lightly. We chat about failure and how his girls are constantly reminding him the importance of starting businesses that connect to your heart. Ben also goes into the pros and cons of building an e-commerce business versus a brick and mortar, and why it's okay, and even sometimes an added bonus, to have lots of different interests as an entrepreneur. Y'all, I left this conversation feeling so inspired to check in with my own business and make sure that my heart was truly connecting with our team and clients. Because Ben holds each business opportunity so lightly, his attitude is infectious, and it makes these open doors that happen in life feel so much more exciting than scary. I cannot wait to hear what you get out of this episode. So without further ado, here is my chat with master serial entrepreneur, Ben Sweat. Well, thank you, Ben, so much for being on the Small Business Big Heart Podcast. I am honored to have you here. You've been one of our most interesting and unique clients that I think I've ever had, and I've been eagerly just waiting to interview you. So thank you for accepting this interview and being here today.
Oh, you're welcome. And that's with that introduction, that makes me ask all kinds of questions in my mind.
Well, I can answer them for you. I was super excited to interview you because you've started so many businesses and you work a full-time job. You're located in Austin and you have how many kids?
I have five kids. My oldest is 15. I have a 13-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And the first four are all girls. And my son brought up the rear and... Yeah, they've kept me busy. And, you know, like I said, I've said this many times to other people that no matter what happens in business, I feel like I succeeded in life with that. So it starts off with that foundation, I think. So, I have a fantastic spouse as well who keeps me level and I would never have done any of these endeavors without a support of a strong spouse. So,
And I've had the honor to meet her, and I can acclaim the same. She's a fantastic human. If we were in the same city, you'd be in trouble. We'd be friends, and you would be in so much trouble.
That would be fun.
Oh, I love it. Well, I love how you defined success within your family first, and then kind of moving into business and how they've supported each other. And I'm just curious of how you managed to balance those two.
The balance is something I've strived for always. It's one of my avatars. Every time I default in Apple and Gmail, and I try to remind myself of having this yin yang life. And the truth is it varies. You know, sometimes things are balanced where I'm spending too much time with family and not enough time in the business, and, you know, multiple jobs, multiple roles in the community and church and things like that. Honestly, you just do the best you can and just try to keep things in perspective. With family, it's a little bit easier because, especially during COVID, I'm at home. I can see where there might be some attention need to be given. I can kind of have a better sense of how things are going. But again, it's perspective. Business is what we do, but it's not what defines us. It's not our life. It's just a part of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And being able to tell when you're out of whack in that balance too, what is usually some red flags that you're out of balance or out of your sweet spot?
Yeah, I think some of it is like just if I'm not sleeping well, if it feels like I'm a little frazzled, like feeling stressed, if, you know, a little cranky or, you know, something like that. It's just like you realize that maybe something's not quite right, or if there's a lot of times there's confusion, like I'm not quite sure what the next step should be, whether it be in family or business. It's sort of a reset, and that usually does the trick, really. I mean, but that is the challenge, you know. It's like, how do you have a balanced life and enjoy yourself? And I mean, I think there's this perception that the only way to be successful is that you just have to dedicate everything to a certain passion, and you can't have it all, but I sure try.
Yeah. And I feel like you do it really well with managing your time and hobbies and relationships and the way that you give back to your community. It's really inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about what inspired you to start all of these businesses and how your family played into that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the shortcut to it is the businesses that I'm currently working on are sort of inspired by women and sort of focused on women. I can't honestly say that I started out that way, but I can give the short version to how I got to that spot is, you know, I had started a business when I moved to Austin, had sold most of my interest in that, and then was just consulting, just kind of doing my own thing, trying to figure out what the next thing was. And as far as looking for inspiration, part of consulting is you're looking at companies that need some assistance, that maybe aren't quite running totally smoothly. And it was sort of in that process where I considered buying a business, or historically I've always been the person who started it from scratch and cobbled together resources, and it's a whole different beast. So I started thinking it might be easier to buy a business and looking around. And in the process, you know, I was looking for something that had a start, a really good brand, an interesting space. I mean, there's some basic requirements that I was looking for. But, you know, as far as like making the leap, it in a lot of ways, it wasn't very difficult to make the decision to do it. I had a bunch of things I was considering doing. I remember going through a list of all of them, and one of the businesses that I ended up buying was on that list. And I described it to people as, you know, imagine you're in a large warehouse with completely pitch black, the lights are off, and you're just walking around this gigantic warehouse, and then somebody on the opposite end cracks the door open. And you just see light for a second that kind of illuminates like where to go. You know, it's like, oh, okay, now I kind of get my surroundings. And buying this business was sort of that moment. I was like, that's the only thing that feels remotely right. And in the absence of any sort of inspiration, I was like, I just held on to it like for dear life and just like, that's what I'm going to do. And so, I mean, the whole process that when I started buying a business to when I concluded was about a year. So it's a good thing I had sort of that strong conviction, I guess, because I probably would have given up to the acquisition part. But yeah, that's sort of what led me to buying it. And then the business I bought, I suppose it's appropriate to share the name of that business, but you know, I bought this business, One Savvy Girl. It was aimed at women who wanted to look fabulous and be outside. And, you know, I was kind of drawn to it because I feel like in my world, the women in my world, they don't necessarily seem like the Patagonia women and the REI women and the Columbia and North Face types. So I thought there was an opportunity there that could be interesting. So rebranded it with your help, Savvy Outdoors. And, you know, it's going for that. You know, I think of my girls, you know, they're savvy. They're super smart. They're clever. And they're beautiful, you know? And so like the goods that I would try to produce, or I want to produce, the aspirational goal of the brand is sort of reflects that, right? It's something that I'd be like, yeah, you can be feminine and care of what, you know, some of the traditional aspects of femininity. And you can also be like a really strong woman. And the advantage of this is that now when I talk about business and what I do, my girls actually care what I do. You know, I don't think they've ever cared anything about any sort of job or work that some startup or venture backed business. And other than the fact that some had fish or, you know, M&M machine or something like that. But with Savvy Outdoors, I mean, they get into like, you know, what the branding looks like and the, you know, they get excited about the colors and they get excited about, you know, hey, I get to show my friends this and you know, it's like a physical product. And so I get, they've given me inspiration for certain items and products that we have in development. And it's just a lot of fun, you know? And I think, I guess I start having the aspiration of someday being able to work with them and kind of turn it into a family business. I didn't necessarily have that intention when I started it, but now it's at least a possibility. It's a fun one to entertain, I guess.
Yeah. And they're so intrigued. I even remember when we sent the branding, I was more nervous for your girls to see it than for you to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they care a lot about it. They went through every slide and every video presentation of yours. And I mean, they loved it. So that's kind of what I use to kind of gauge if we nailed it or not, you know, are they excited about it? So it's good enough for me if they are.
Absolutely. And it helps that your target audience lives in your house. Makes the customer experience yeah. journey and research a little bit easier. Well, I know we talked a little bit about Savvy and you have a larger portfolio. If you're comfortable in sharing a little bit about what you have in the works and how those kind of came about, I think a lot of the business owners yeah. that even with Carper Hart that we work with are starting businesses out of a passion or a hobby that turned into something. And I think that you're probably one of the few entrepreneurs that I know that have purchased, made it your own, flipped it. I almost, like, when I describe you to people, I related you to Chip and Joe Anna Gaines of how you buy, flip, and sell. And I think that that's really interesting in how you do business. So if you have any insight, I know the first business and brand that I'm thinking of stemmed off of the one that you just talked about. So how did that come about?
Yeah. Well, maybe to set that up, I guess I should start with the parent entity of Savvy Outdoors is Sweat Equity. And obviously I didn't use a lot of creativity when I came up with that name. My last name is Sweat. And you know, when I was thinking about buying the business, in my mind, I was like, well, listen, I've got a really good network where I can find some cash, but mostly it's going to be just a lot of hard work that I put into this. And I have fantastic credit. So what could I do? I could borrow money, right, in that situation. So the sweat equity was sort of not, it was on the nose in the sense that it was my name, but it was also on the nose that all of the equity that I have in these businesses is something that I get through just sweat equity, working hard and putting into it and convincing people to trust me to do a good job. So it's not my own money that's doing this. You know, it's other people's capital, whether it be debt or equity, whatever it might be. So that was sort of started out. I didn't necessarily think of sweat equity as like, you know, a Procter & Gamble thing where we'd have multiple brands underneath it, but that's just kind of how the structure started. So when we were doing Savvy Outdoors, for the listeners out there, we were considering rebranding the name, right? So we didn't know if One Savvy Girl was, didn't feel quite right, but you know, what we could rebrand it to. And in that process, we had a bunch of beautiful options that came out. And one of them was Evoli, the brand Evoli. And I remember the time it was presented, it was sort of like, hey, wow, that's a beautiful name, but man, it sounds like a cosmetic company, not the outdoor brand that I'm going for. You know, we kept Savvy Outdoors, and I'm glad we did. But so Evoli kind of stemmed out of this, I guess more of just from the name itself, which is kind of funny. I mean, I had this in the seed in my mind of doing a cosmetic business, but it was sort of driven by the business kind of components of it, like the size of the industry, the growth, the relatively stable nature during recessions, the margins, all this kind of stuff that doesn't really get you excited, right? Like, to use one of your words, there was no heart in it at that point. It was just sort of like a brain exercise. So Evoli, kind of the names just started sitting in that and felt like there was something there. And as we've brainstormed through that with you and your team, I was looking for something that could resonate with me. Like, why would I do this? And it kind of came back again to my family and to the girls, to my wife, and just, you know, and sort of, you know, our spiritual beliefs of that there's this intrinsic beauty in everybody and there's an inherent worth to every woman. And, you know, the idea of the cosmetic industry is generally trying to make you feel bad in some way about yourself to make you try to fix it, right? It's maybe not intentional sometimes, but that's sort of the effects. So with Evoli, it just felt like, hey, this is an opportunity that, you know, could be an affirmative brand and make you feel like you're enough. And it's to sort of help you feel the way, outwardly feel how you feel on the inside and how you really are on the inside. So it wasn't necessarily intended to be, you know, a super Christian brand or anything on the nose like that, but it feels kind of like that, right? Where it's, we're catering to someone who kind of believes that about themselves, that they're more than just Instagram profiles and things like that. And also just, you know, caring what you put in your body and on your body. And so Evoli's intended to be more of a clean beauty brand, but still with, you know, pragmatic components of it. It still works. And I think, you know, it's, and I think even just with Evoli, I think of Eve, you know, the, you know, Mother Nature, the OG of women, like she's the boss, you know, like what a great example for my girls. And to be fair, it's an infancy. It's a start. It could totally fail, but I'm excited about it, right? And that's the point, I think, that I've discovered in this whole journey is that I've always admired people who felt like they could find work that didn't feel like work. And this kind of gives it that component to it. And I enjoy it and I like it. And if it fails, it fails. But, you know, as a mentor of mine told me, like, I'm already winning. I get to be on this path. I'm already winning at this point. So if the outcome is favorable, great. If it's not, then I enjoyed it and we'll, you know, there'll be another one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes the pressure off the business itself and yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And you like me to mention the other one too that we are,
absolutely,
are spinning off?
Absolutely. That's my favorite story along with the rest, because it was like, hey, I'm going to do this thing. Are you ready? I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah. And the third brand that we're sort of adding to the Sweat Equity sort of portfolio, and again, it's still a modest portfolio at this point because there's only one brand that actually makes money. But when we were in the process of product development, you know, I like to surround myself with lots of smart people, and especially given this is a part-time deal for me, I have to rely on other agencies and talent. So they had brought to me a product in the fitness space, and I'll, since it's not launched yet, I'll keep it somewhat secret, I guess, some of the mystique.
Yes.
But in the fitness space, and it was sort of one of these things like, yeah, let's do it. You know, I've got the product development partners and the manufacturer partners in place. I've got the Amazon channel in place. I've got, you know, just a lot of things already working for it. And it wasn't a very tough decision. It was sort of like, yeah, let's do it. And sort of then from there, it was like, well, let's, unlike some of the other ones, it wasn't a deliberate thought through branding process. It was more of, frankly, I looked through domains that I owned, right? And with the last name Sweat, I happened to own a lot of domains with the name Sweat in it, or the word Sweat.
Rightfully so.
And so yeah,
I would hope so. Snatch those all up.
so one of the domains I owned was mostsweat.com. So instead of no sweat, it's more sweat, more money, more problems, most sweat. That's what that's intended to be. And it just kind of fit with the fitness product. And, you know, we jammed on it with you, and we spun out a brand where it's, I'd say it's the most instinctive of any of the things we've worked on. We're just going with it. And it turned out great. And again, it's the same sort of thing that it could totally fail, but it's been a lot of fun. And it's an interesting category. Like, to me, it's like, you know, people who work out are happy people. When you work out, you're happy. Like, to get people to work out and to be healthy, it's another thing that just sort of lines up with things that matter to you at your core. So again, it's a fun project. It's a fun thing, and I think it makes business sense too. But that one is, you know, launching this first quarter of 2021. So that will, I'm excited about that. But you know, there'll be more. I'm sure there'll be more. It's just part of. It's interesting. Sweat Equity is really starting to reflect my personality, which is lots of different interests, reflects my family. I can't do just one thing, hence why I have a full-time job and a part-time job and all that. So it's really kind of becoming a caricature away in a way of me as a person.
Yeah. So. And it's interesting how you didn't start off with that being the intention or goal. It just naturally started evolving and trusting your instincts and your guts and just, again, following those cracked doors and holding on to that light and just running after it. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's right.
And what is it that you do full time? Because adding this all in, it just makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So I should start with saying that the type of work that I did before, and I have a fantastic employer, and I'm happy to talk about them in a second. But I went to business school at University of Chicago. Afterwards, I went to work for Yahoo in their new product development group. So in LA, where I lived for a decade, I was doing essentially product management, product development for tech companies. So they range from small startups to companies that went public to incubators, that are well known in the tech space. And product management is a specific function within the tech world where you're sort of the hub of the wheel. You've got engineers, you've got designers, you're like a movie producer, but for tech products, you know, whether it be an app or a website or anything like that. And so that's sort of what I functionally know how to do. So I work for a company called Homey, which is a venture-backed business that's raised Series B, 20-something million dollars in Series B financing, 2019, I guess it was, when they raised their Series B. It's, it's in the real estate space, an innovator and disrupting sort of the commission structures that you see in buy and sell real estate. So I run a business unit called Marketplace. So I'm an entrepreneur in that sense. You know, I'm starting a group from scratch with no revenue, try to grow that. And I really, really enjoy it. You know, I've known the founders since the very, very beginning. And you know, I tried to work with them a couple other times. Just didn't end up working out. So 5 years after first, getting exposed to to Homey, this company based in Utah, I joined with them to work. Now, so the interesting thing is about businesses, if you're borrowing money from a bank, they actually prefer you have a different job, like you have a full-time job. As opposed to if you're raising money from investors, like venture capital investors, they don't want you having a job. They want you to be all in on it. Mm-hmm. So it is a little bit different. But, given the family situation that I have, I've got kids just get more expensive as they get older. So, that's not going to change anytime soon. So my personal burn rate is too high to be the garage startup person, but I work a lot. That's certainly I do. I certainly work a lot, but interesting. COVID's actually helped us in a lot of ways because I've eliminated the commute. I was planning on moving to Utah. We ended up staying put in Austin for the time being. And it's just worked. Mm-hmm. I have a fantastic job and love the company and love my colleagues. And so it works. I guess it works in other situations. It might not, but I feel like I give everything I can to Homey and still get to have my side project, side hustle, I guess. I mean, some people buy condos and rental homes and rent those out. It's not that much different in my mind of how this business is running, but I understand this a whole lot better than I do the residential housing market. So,
yeah. It makes much more sense for you.
It works.
And I think what's interesting too is of something that you said is you can pour all of your energy into your full-time job in Homey and give them everything you have. But the way that you're able to run your other businesses, you mentioned bringing in other agencies and like yours truly and other product development and Amazon experts, like you trust your vendors so much that it allows you to be present in this full-time job versus a lot of side hustlers try to do it all. And I think that's something really unique about you. So how do you manage that and build that trust and find the right people for that?
Yeah, I mean, that's not easy. I mean, because there's trade-offs to it, right? On one hand, it's like, I don't have any employees. That's fantastic. I don't have to be an HR company. What I love about having agencies that work with me is it's like I've hired other entrepreneurs instead of having employees, right? Entrepreneurs tend to be, they act like an owner, they make it right, they don't need to tell them what to do. So those are the advantages of it. Obviously, the disadvantages of it is there's always communication gaps that you have to figure out. There's always make sure you sometimes you don't know what you want. I was familiar with e-commerce space, but physical products, Amazon, it's a little different. There's just nuances that you have to kind of figure out and just finding the right mix. At some point I might outgrow that. I hope in a way I outgrow that at some point. Just otherwise the business isn't growing, which it should do. But for the time being, I'm not the expert, so I can invest my time or my money, and I invest my money in a way through passing that on to some experts to invest in the business.
Yeah, Absolutely. Well, I think that's interesting too, because not only are you now not having to decide between your businesses and your full-time job or your family, like that's where your time is being sent and going to. And so being able to invest your money to outsourcing and bringing in the right people. And like you said, you're not an HR company now. You don't have to deal with all the different employees. And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely great. What advice do you have to the listeners that are maybe still trying to do it all?
I would say never be shy about asking for help, even if you're not paying somebody. People are generally pretty generous with their time and to get suggestions on what to do. And, you know, with limited time, you have to focus where you're going to have the most leverage. That ends up being a bit of a blessing in a way. It is what it is. You just don't have so much time. So you got to put it toward what's best for you. So if you're not good at certain things and you have the ability to ask somebody else for help to do it, you should do it. I think the broader thing, you're trying to get something going on the side, it's your passion. It's got to be the passion or you will not find the time. You will burn out. It'll fail. I'd say a slow and painful death, but it usually what ends up happening is that it eventually dies really, really quick. You don't see it coming and all of a sudden it's dead. That's what's tough about, you know, doing this stuff on the side. It really is just, it's the balance aspect of things.
Yeah. And I love that because when we first communicated, your Gmail came through and it was the yin yang in your photo. And now it all makes sense. It all makes sense. Have you ever, I know you mentioned how like failure comes about in the senses of not having the passion to support it. Have you ever gone through a burnout season or walked through failure? I've heard the saying of it happens slowly and then all at once when it starts to crumble down. But what lessons have you learned or have you walked through that before?
Yeah, I would love to say I'm like a Midas and everything I've touched has worked. But, I'm a person that has been around a lot of success, but haven't necessarily reaped that success myself in the sense of like career-wise or business-wise or money-wise. But the things that I have started on my own, I've certainly had failure. I would say it's painful. But there really isn't any substitute for experience. If there's anything I've learned, even on like an Amazon business that I bought, you can think that, I'll figure this out. I'll pay some smart people, but I still have to learn about the business. I still have to pay that price. And your own hubris gets in the way sometimes. That's one of the lessons I've learned is that don't underestimate the people who have done this before because they've paid that price. And so you got to realize that you may be talented, but man, there's things you just don't know. And you don't know what you don't know a lot of times. So, I mean, I give you a couple, you know, failure stories. At one point I went all in and I had partners who were part-time and I was full-time and I was just living off my own savings account. And honestly, we had a fantastic vision, pretty good product, but you know, I was probably the one person who shouldn't have been full-time because I wasn't creating the product. And, you know, we ran out of money, we ran out of time. And you know, this general truth is that most businesses probably will work if you just don't run out of money. But the problem is you run out of money.
Yeah.
Right. So you gotta try to make it work before you run out of money. You know, the other failure I had, you know, I was pursuing an idea that was a fantastic idea. I pitched it. I'd gotten seed money for it. And the reality was I just wasn't passionate about it. It was in a space that I didn't know much about. It was, you know, mobile gaming. And there was, you know, sort of some trials that came about in the process of building that in early stage. And I just didn't have anything in the tank to sort of push through that trial. And it wasn't related to the business at all. It was like a community tragedy that, you know, friends of ours that were going through, and it just kind of shook me up a little bit. And I didn't have anything. I go, I'm making a difference today. I'm excited to go back to work at this project. And so it just died. I just couldn't do it. So gave up on that. And I think that's a general thought, is that got to have a reason for doing it, because inevitably stuff will get hard and you just got to be able to kind of push through it.
Well, I applaud you too, because when you go down these routes, you learn things along the way and then you don't hold too tightly to them. when they're not working out, you look for opportunity and you pivot. Even though pivot kind of feels like a cuss word right now with how much people are saying it. But you do, you move swiftly and you follow your instinct and you trust your gut. And I admire that. That's very impressive.
Thank you.
Of course. Well, I know a lot of our listeners might be running e-commerce space or product-based businesses. And you have Amazon as a large seller too of direct consumer. So tell me a little bit about how you're building this in your full-time, like this service-based business, and you're providing and building a team, but then you kind of switch hats, switch gears, and come into the e-commerce space. What have you learned from stepping into that space, and how do you plan to grow it?
In a lot of ways, there's a lot of things that are similar. So I was working on e-commerce sites that did millions and millions of dollars transactions a month. And so I'm used to conversion rate optimization, the customer experience, and all those kind of things, and merchandising the products. But I've never had to deal with the physical sourcing of products or physical product development. So, you know, in software, a product development cycle could be days. You know, you could have something where idea to shipping it out and being live. Physical products take an enormous amount of time. So that part's been a challenge to kind of get my head around. It makes it fun too, because it's like something you can physically hold. And in a lot of ways, it's much simpler. You can use your instinct on a widget and say, I like that, yes or no. It's not super complicated. The other component to e-commerce businesses is inventory. I mean, with software, any incremental user or whatever else, it doesn't use any incremental expense or investment for that. That's what scales so nicely about it. That's why all these very valuable companies are software-based. But with physical inventory, there's a cash component to that. There's, you know, getting the projections right and that sort of thing. So, I mean, generally, I feel better because the experts that I've talked to have been successful in the space are always saying, hey, it's inventory hurts one way or another. You know, it's either going to order too much or too little. There's going to be that bumpiness in that supply chain. But I would just say to those who are just getting started into it, you just have to probably go easy. You'd rather probably sell out than overstock and just be aware that you, on paper, you might feel like you're doing great, but cash flow is different than having sales. It's like what you have in the bank at any given time matters. So yeah, I guess those are some basic things on e-commerce. Is think about what moves the needle for you, you know, distribution channels, or if it's markets, or if it's additional products, the industry you're in. There's a lot of different factors, I think.
Yeah. And one thing that I picked up on you saying is, well, the experts told me blank, or my mentor told me blank. And so it sounds like you have a lot of great people pouring into you and like championing you in this season. So what type of people do you have in your corner right now?
I mean, I have a fantastic family, and I don't mean just my kids. I come from one of eight kids, and I'm the second to the youngest of those eight kids. So, siblings that have been through a lot. And so they're always, you know, great to have in my corner. I feel very lucky to have a great network. I really do feel like I have a network that has sort of been built over, gosh, it's getting close to a couple decades of my career, where, you know, you work together with companies and something bad happens, like layoffs, and everybody spreads out. And also, but what the good thing about that is your network just expands by a lot. And just over time that's happened. And I think, you know, also just having, you have your own tribe, it helps. I mean, for me, as you're aware, I'm a member of the LDS faith, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that's been sort of one of those foundational things that if we move somewhere, it's unique in the sense that it's based on geographic boundaries of when you attend and where you attend. And so you get this mixture of people that is not based on, you know, common interest of like which pastor you might like, or, you know, whatever thing you might have. It's like you're kind of forced to get along in a certain geographic area. You have a shared set of values that immediately lets you bond. You trust each other, right? So that I think you can use for other things. And so if there are people who have you know, there's Facebook groups and Amazon, there's masterminds, they call them, where you communicate with other sellers and other buyers and for support. You know, it's definitely important. You gotta figure out where your tribe is. And it could be, it doesn't have to be a professional tribe. But interesting enough, you know, the sort of this church connections, you end up getting those connections sort of just naturally, you know, as you, I generally believe you get what you receive, you know, you reap what you sow. And so I've always tried to be a mentor to people who would ask. I've always tried to be one to introduce people to other people, to try to be generous with my network and my contacts. And it tends to come back, I think. And I don't know, you got to have somebody you can bounce off stuff one way or another. So you got to have some mentors from work or from personal life, something.
Absolutely. That's a huge part that we really love to like dig into, because, you know, I'm huge on community, and I know my business would never be here today without my community. And I know yours just explodes when you bring in the right people. So I think it's really unique of just how different entrepreneurs use community to grow their business and them personally and do good. So I love hearing that.
Mm-hmm. In this particular space with e-commerce and buying businesses, it's an incredibly small community.
Really?
So if you are, yeah, you would be surprised, but there's only a handful of brokers who represent these deals. There's only a handful of financial partners who will lend on these type of deals. It's an incredibly small community. And so it's a double-edged sword. You got to be somebody that they can trust and like. You never know what's going to come back around. Yes, but it also works to your advantage. Like if someone's interested in buying an e-commerce business, it does not take long to get networked into the hub of activity.
That's interesting. You would never know as a service-based business or a brick and mortar that world exists, but it makes sense. Thank you, internet, for making e-commerce possible. Well, to slowly wrap up here, can you give us just a little sneak peek of what you see in the future of Sweat Equity and the brands that it represents?
I think for me, the future of these businesses, you know, I've sort of been laying a foundation of investing into branding and product development, and hopefully, you know, start seeing the benefits of those. Like I'm basically making those bets, but again, as I mentioned, it takes a really long time to develop product in the physical e-commerce space. But I eventually think that will, you know, grow. You know, expanding distribution channels. I'd like to have the business grow exposure. I mean, and ultimately, I think for e-commerce, the what you're ultimately trying to go after is you're trying to get people who are loyal to you, who come to your website, who buy from you on a repeated basis. That sense of community where you kind of know who your customers are, right? When you're selling on Amazon, you don't necessarily know who's the end user. So that's the part that I'll be pushing more to grow directly and have those direct relationships with customers. And I'm excited about that. So, I mean, I think it'll be more of the same. I'll probably pump the brakes a little bit on some of this expansion, because again, you can't spread yourself too thin, but I will let some of these investments start growing and see what happens. So I'll expect some failures, but I expect to see some successes in there as well.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be cheering for you every step of the way.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before hopping off?
I mean, I think small business owners I really do think the heart of the economy. And I just have so much admiration for anybody that is putting their, you know, livelihood out on the line and taking chances. And there's a lot of people that want to see you succeed. So I feel like the mental aspect of entrepreneurship is the thing that's most misunderstood and underappreciated, because my journey up to this point was just incomplete. Like I always thought of it as like, I can solve everything. I can fix it and stuff like that. But when the business that I started here was going great, it was a partnership fallout. that eventually made me sell my interest. And that was some dark days after that. Like, just felt, you know, betrayal and like, why did I move here? I just moved across the country and gave up a fantastic community in California, and just getting right in my head, you know, just trying to understand, like, just shaking in confidence and all that. It just was not a great time of life, you know? And I feel like because of that sort of crucible, it sort of made me deal with things that I deal with in different ways. You know, it's like I finally, I don't know, become more of a whole person, I guess. And that set the stage for this journey that I'm on right now, is I feel like I'm the most okay with failure if it doesn't work. I wouldn't feel bad about myself today if this stuff just doesn't go on. It's be like, yeah, I tried and whatever. But before that, it felt like I was just so attached to my career, and it just like, it's who I was. And, you know, I'm the breadwinner, and, you know, to have this perceived failure in a dramatic way of like, wow, this partnership just didn't work out, you know? And now what do? I basically kind of torched my network from California in a way, just like walked away. And, you know, it's harder to find a job when all of a sudden you don't know anybody. You know, it's like, what do? So I felt like I wandered in the desert for like a good year of just not knowing what it is I wanted to do. So, I mean, the point is that I finally, it's probably the happiest I've ever been, I guess. It's what it comes down to. And I you know, at Homie, our CEO, that's a friend of mine from college, talks about mental fitness. And so he's big into like how we perceive things and how our brains add meaning to things that shouldn't be added to. Like, just like being mentally fit is so important in business. And in entrepreneurship, I think it's the hardest part. I mean, I would guess, you know, things tend to, like within the tech community, tech founders are probably more likely to commit suicide and be depressed, and just kind of being aware of that. It's like, it can be a depressing place, you know, and just realizing that you got to get yourself right. You got to have your family situation right. You got to get your own kitchen in order before you can try to solve some big problems, you know?
I know you didn't mean to like maybe refer that, but you said it was like the darkest days. But then when you were describing Savvy, you said you were walking through a dark warehouse and then there was a light at the crack at the end. And it's like very interesting how those dark days you related in your story without really saying it, which is really interesting. But thank you for being transparent. Well, thank you so much, Ben, for joining us today on the podcast. And where can our guest find you online? Where can they buy all of your awesome product?
Yeah, so savvy-outdoors.com is our URL. You can find us on Amazon just by searching Savvy Outdoors. I'm not terribly hard to find on LinkedIn if anybody ever wants to reach out. There's not too many Ben Sweats in the world.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ben, for being on here, and we look forward to catching up soon. Did this episode get your wheels turning and thinking about your own branding? If you're looking for professional branding advice and want to pick the brain of a professional, we offer brand consultation calls with yours truly. In this call, we'll suggest small changes for big impact for the future of your business. Over the call, we'll review your current branding, talk about the vision for your future, and create a strategy to get you there. This consultation includes a free copy of our branding questionnaire that we use with all of our clients, which is a $47 free value. If you're ready to pull the trigger, get on copperheartcreative.com and book your call.